Hello, everybody. My name is Ed Hurwitz. I'm a physical medicine rehabilitation physician and department chair at the University of Michigan. It is my pleasure to present this podcast on measuring grip strength in adolescents and adults with cerebral palsy in a clinic setting, feasibility, reliability, and clinical associations. This work was done in our Michigan Medicine Adults with Pediatric Onset Disability program. The authors include Dr. Tomoko Sugiyama Baba, who's from Showa University in Japan, and Daniel Whitney from the University of Michigan, Mary Schmidt, Heidi Hoppala, Angeline Bowman, Mark Peterson, and myself, Ed Hurwitz, all from the University of Michigan. At the University of Michigan Adults with Pediatric Onset Disability Program, we have been studying the medical outcomes and functional outcomes of adults with cerebral palsy for the past 15 years. And we published several papers showing some of the issues and problems that people face as they grow up with cerebral palsy. What we have found is that aging leads to significant challenges for people to grow up with cerebral palsy. They're at high risk of chronic diseases. They're at a well-known risk of pain, fatigue, and functional loss. We also know that adults with cerebral palsy have a significant deficit in the amount of high quality care that they're able to obtain. That is, there are very few specialists around the country that have particular expertise in adults with cerebral palsy, and primary care docs certainly do not have that expertise. There's a lack of education about adults with cerebral palsy and their medical needs. One of the main issues facing adults with cerebral palsy in terms of their ability to get proper care is doing appropriate screening for risk of chronic diseases. Because of their differential anatomy and physiology, adults with cerebral palsy are not able to use the same kind of screening procedures that people who do not have cerebral palsy do. A classic example is BMI, body mass index. We all know that body mass index is a measure that we use to determine cardiovascular risk, and we all know that it is subject to being affected by how much muscle mass the person has versus how much body fat the person has. So it is a good measure in the general population, but if there's some alterations in the body composition, there's going to be a problem. People with cerebral palsy will have alterations in their body composition. They will generally have less muscle mass, less bone mass, meaning they have less fat-free mass overall, and that means that their fat mass will actually be underestimated. They may have a normal BMI, but have a very high fat mass. There are other examples of issues and problems with measuring the risk of chronic disease in adults with cerebral palsy. And so, a good way to measure them fairly simply and in the clinic setting is important. Grip strength is an established biomarker of health in the general population. Weak grip is associated with increased risk of functional disability, fracture, cardiometabolic disease, musculoskeletal morbidity, early mortality, and it's highly correlated with other measures of strength and body composition. Grip strength has been extensively studied in the typically developing population, but not really at all in adults with cerebral palsy. There's been some studies that looked at children, and there's been some studies that looked at adults in a research setting, but not really in the clinical setting. The goal of our study was to examine the feasibility and the reliability of doing grip strength on adults with cerebral palsy in the clinic setting so that we could get some idea of how useful this measure would be to use as a way of screening for chronic disease. In addition, we wanted to do some initial forays into looking at the way that grip strength could help us to understand the risk for chronic disease by looking at medical history and then comparing that to grip strength. Our subjects for this study were individuals with cerebral palsy, age 16 and older, who came in sequentially to our clinic and were willing to participate in the study. We did several measures for this study. We measured, of course, hand grip. We used a Jamar.
Dynamometer.
We had them hold it with their arm flexed at 90 degrees. We had them do three trials with each hand after doing a trial to get used to the device. We also measured body composition. We measured their weight. We measured their hip circumference and waist circumference and the ratio using standard methodology. And we measured their tricep skin fold using a skin fold measuring device. We also took a medical history to get an idea if grip strength would be predictive in any way of their past medical history to give us some idea if it might suggest something about risk for the future. Let's look at the results. The study taught us that hand grip strength is a clinically feasible measure for adults with cerebral palsy. Most patients were willing to participate. It was easily done in clinic, did not take much time. We also found excellent test, retest, reliable in that same clinic visit across GMFCS and max levels. We're coming out with another study that will show that there was good stability of the grip strength in over a 1 year period, which is interesting because one would worry that it might decline because of decline in function of cerebral palsy, but hopefully we'll have more to say about that in the future. Grip strength was associated with sex, weight, waist circumference, GMFCS, and was especially associated with max. Grip strength, when added to models with GMFCS, was able to enhance the prediction of chronic disease compared to just GMFCS alone, which shows promise for grip strength being a measure to help us with chronic disease prediction in adults with cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is a very heterogeneous condition. We did not represent the entire spectrum of cerebral palsy. We didn't have people with significant cognitive impairment. We did not have people with significant hand function problems such that they couldn't handle the device at all. So it is likely that to really do good risk prediction in cerebral palsy, it will take a suite of measures depending on different factors. In addition, one might ask why we did not do height or body mass index in this study. And the main reason for that is that we wanted to put together measures that could be easily done in clinic. Height has many challenges in people with cerebral palsy, and therefore so does body mass index, which is another reason why it is much less reliable.
We gratefully acknowledge the funding for this project from the Foundation for PM&R, the Gabriella E. Molnar-Swafford Pediatric Research Grant. I want to thank everybody for your attention. I want to thank again all of the co-authors on this project. And my email is there at the bottom. Contact me if you have questions. Thank you.